shit, bro, they do a good job, bro.
Power, power, it's the one. Power, power, it's the who. Power, power, yeah, yeah. Black, Hispanics, and Native. Power, power, it's the one. Power, power, it's the who. Power, power, yeah, yeah. Black, Hispanics.
Every Saturday morning, you need to be tuning in. Wake up, get crushed out your eyes. We about to go live, so come get the schooling in. About our oppression, we answer the questions like, how do we get out this low estate? We let the scripts prophesy. We bringing the Bible to life so that you relate. The world thinks we're rejects, but that word we reject. Watch and we'll show you precept upon precept, line upon line. The scripts say we're the greatest, and they can't debate it. Salvation is only for the Blacks, Hispanics, and Natives.
Power, power. The one, power, power, it's the who, power, power, yeah, yeah, Black, Hispanics, and Native, power, power, it's the one, power, power, it's the who, power, power, yeah, yeah, Black, Hispanics, and Native, power, power, it's the one, power, power, it's the who, power, power, yeah, yeah, Black, Hispanics, and Native, power, power, it's the one, power, power, it's the who, power, power.
Shalom, shalom. Welcome to the Power Hour, Native Latin and Black Biblical Topics. I'm Captain Yahshua.
Shalom, happy Sabbath, Captain Aparium.
Shalom, happy Sabbath, Captain Amariah.
I don't know why it just popped into my head when the dude came to the school and said, Yahshua.
What the hell?
I know, everybody was like, does he mean Ezekiel? I was like, nope, he's talking about something else
entirely. No, he really meant Joshua.
He really meant Joshua. Happy Sabbath to the 12 tribes scattered abroad.
Greetings.
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 Test, test, test. Yeah, I'm getting like static.
Yeah. Is the camera thing like clear? Because my thing looks blurry. Is it greasy? Need to be wiped? You can wipe it with a greasy shirt? Yeah, what's up? It's not broadcasting high def. What's going on?
Grease on, grease on, grease.
Getting static in the headphones. What are you guys doing over here with this stuff?
Messing with everything. I know he's getting nervous. It's like every morning we got to mess with him with that. So all praises to the Most High for another Sabbath day.
Yep, all praises.
We are here. We're going to talk about an interesting topic. It dawned on me that, you know, there are many of our people that still have this election thing in their minds. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I would say this. It's human nature, right? As much as, you know, sometimes that term is corrupted, but it's carnal nature, right? It's human nature to want to affiliate yourself,
mm-hmm.
right? Yeah, to have an affinity for something. And I think what happens, because I'll say this like this when it comes to politics, I'll speak from my own experience. I was never heavy into it. I know Captain Parham was talking during the New Moon class that maybe he voted twice. I probably voted
once. Once.
I probably voted more than that, but not much. No, definitely more than once, definitely more than twice.
Yeah.
Maybe five times I might have voted.
That was
my
the
life.
First time I registered to vote that one
right.
that same year. Never.
Right. I might have voted five times, probably only voted for like the president three times, and then the other two were like mayor in New York. And it's funny because having that experience, I got to tell you something. There's a lot that goes into that. Most people don't even know who or why they're voting for these people. They vote based on the television ads.
Right.
I'll tell you that from person yeah. because that's what I did. I never researched a candidate and said, now I'm not saying everybody's like that, right? Yeah, because I'm sure you'll have your one or two studious brothers and sisters be like, well, not me. When I did vote, I made sure that I vetted them and checked
no,
their
yeah,
background.
No, yeah, for sure.
Y'all full of crap because those of you who voted for Obama just voted because you said yes.
No. People said that. They said, hey, listen, from 1770 whatever until 2008, we've had all white presidents. Let's get the first black guy in there at least.
Right.
They were openly saying that.
And he was cool too. He was smooth.
But my point is, it's a very uneducated process in the way in which we vote.
Right.
I mean, hence people like Trump. Right. I mean,
he's like the basis of men.
Yeah, he really is.
He definitely got to be one of the worst presidents ever. I think he's going to be remembered historically as one of the worst.
Don't tell him that. He thinks he's doing a bang up job.
And I think it's debatable if he's the basis that's ever run, though. Because, like, I was reading about a couple here that ran, like, from the article that we're going to read. But anyway, so my point when it comes to this stuff with the elections and being in this truth, I actually like some of the things Trump says. And I'm not talking about the things where he's telling against himself and his race.
Right.
I'm talking about some of his perspectives on things I'm, like, on board with because it sounds biblical. Not that he's using the Bible, but meaning it's a biblical principle, though they're unaware of it. I like some things the Democrats say occasionally
mm-hmm.
because it's a biblical basis.
Right. That's true. Yep.
So what I mean to say is that can, without you necessarily saying you may not have any intention of voting, you may not have any affinity to any party, they say things sometimes that may trigger an emotion in you and arise in you. And, you know, we got to be careful about that as people in this truth, right? Brothers and sisters walking in this truth. And I think really the aim today is to kind of show, and I know we said this, that the whole establishment is corrupt, right? It's they're going to say what they want to say to get in office. So gosh, there's a cliche freaking quote that I'm thinking about, and I can't remember it. But anyway, so the title of the show is based on this scripture in Proverbs, right? So let's get Proverbs 29:2. And then I want to post some links and stuff. So if you guys want to say some stuff while I do that, I just want to make sure I share to the other pages.
And the thing is, Kat, that has nothing to do with us. That political system has nothing to do with Israel.
Yes. But, you know, I think we sometimes mistake and we assume, and like, for example, you'll get questions about how to observe the Sabbath with somebody coming in or whatever. Mm-hmm. I don't think you might have some people that are with us newer that may be thinking that they're going to go out and vote and that they should do that. And it's not and they should not. Right. Let's get the other one about the Most High will set our ruler up over us.
Right.
But let's read Proverbs 29:2. And then, of course, we have the audience that maybe this is the first time they're hearing something like this. So we want to put it in their mind that and when we talk about benign neglect, to let you know that don't fall asleep when they pass these laws and things like that. I believe that the term sounds familiar to me, so I'm pretty sure it may have come out in a class Bishop did years ago. I'm almost certain, or at least it sounds something like Deacon Yawasab would talk about too. But I feel like there was a class done on it, like when we spoke about benign neglect.
Oh yeah. Sure.
But it's the perfect way to show you that no matter what party affiliate or whatever it is, it's no good. Like it's all the illusion of inclusion with what they do. So let's read Proverbs 29:2 real quick.
The book of Proverbs chapter 29:2. When the righteous are in authority, the people rejoice.
Right. So when the righteous are in authority, and righteousness is determined by the scriptures, right, by the Bible, the righteousness is the laws of the Bible. So when the righteous is in authority, the people will rejoice, even the other nations. There's plenty of scriptures that tells you, because, yes, the other nations will be in the kingdom of heaven.
Bring
even Esau, for a dispensation of time, will be in the kingdom of heaven.
Yep.
But it's a kingdom, and in a kingdom, there is a class system. Mm-hmm. There is a structure and an order. There is lordship and different levels of rulership. They know this perfectly because they've done that for many years with their dukes and everything else, right?
Right.
There are different princes that they've put forth. But in a kingdom, there is a different hierarchical structure. It is a hierarchy because it's a kingdom. I don't know how that's lost on people that they think the kingdom of heaven. It's not the democracy of heaven.
Right.
It's not the
that's
capitalism
true.
Of heaven. It's
right.
The kingdom of heaven.
It's not America in heaven.
And a king has absolute authority. There's not a Congress. There's not a thing done by committee. So that, by the very nature of how the world is ruled today, you're freaking not ready for the kingdom. Mm-hmm. But it says when the righteous are in authority, when you have those leaders that are the Bible, that are Israelites ruling the earth, the people will rejoice. Right? Come on.
But when the wicked beareth rule, the people mourn.
Ah, but when the wicked beareth rule, the people mourn. So let's see who the wicked is, actually. Let's bring that out real quick, right? It says the earth is given into the hand of the wicked, right? So
Malachi
let's
one.
See.
Look at verse 1.
Yeah, Malachi 1. So it says, but when the wicked beareth rule, the people mourn. The people, so you have all types of troubles. You have all types of turmoils and turmoil in the earth because it's against the way things should be. It's not a divine order, right? So let's read this real quick.
The book of Malachi, chapter 1 and verse 4. Whereas Edom saith, we are impoverished, but we will return and build the desolate places. Thus saith the Lord of hosts, they shall build, but I will throw down. Mm. And they shall call them the border of wickedness.
It says they shall call them the border of wickedness. Now let me get the one in Job. It says they shall call them the border of wickedness. Who? Edom. Who is Edom according to the Bible? What the world ignorantly calls the white man today or the Caucasian man.
So ignorantly.
So it says they are the wicked. They said they will call them the border of wickedness, right? They say especially here in the United States, right? There's a lot of countries that have called out and they'll call these various presidents devils. Mm-hmm. They call America, meaning the United States, because America's a misnomer, right? Because America's really like Canada, Mexico included,
right,
as well, right? Or South America or Central, like which America? But really, it's the United States of America is what they're speaking about, right? And it says, when they bear rule, the people mourn. Come on, read this in Job.
The book of Job, chapter 9, verse 24. The earth is given into the hand of the wicked.
It says the earth is given into the hand of the wicked. Who are those rulers in these last days? Who are those people that are in power? And listen, I'm not talking about the decoys, the appeasement offerings of throwing a couple of our people in there, trying to show some other races in there,
right?
That is starting with Esau, like we read in Malachi, all right? And then that confederacy that you read in Psalms 83, those are the ones that are in charge of the earth. Read it again.
The earth is given into the hand of the wicked.
The earth is given into the hand of the wicked. They mourn that?
He covereth the faces of the judges thereof.
He covereth the faces of the judges thereof. The righteous that are in that should be in authority, their faces are covered right now.
If not, where and who is he?
It says, if not, where and who is he? Meaning, where and who is this wicked person? And then when you read in Malachi, it tells you Edom is that border of wickedness. It starts with them. When you read in Psalms 83, it tells you the order of the Confederacy, and it starts with Edom, which is the so-called white man. And then, yes, he has all these other nations with him. Even, like according to Psalms, the second chapter, even some of the Israelites will be in those positions. Right. So it says, but when the wicked beareth rule, the people mourn. And we're going to talk a little bit in more detail about that. I'm going to go ahead and share some stuff. If you guys want to bring some other stuff out.
Did you want that one in Deuteronomy about not having the king over us?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. So that goes for the voting, right? Yeah, yeah. Do bring that out. Thank you.
Deuteronomy chapter 17, verse 15. Thou shalt in any wise set a king over thee, whom the Lord thy God shall choose.
Right. So it says, which says, first of all, we should have a king, not a president, right? And it says, God will choose that king. God will choose that king. That's how it happened. We never voted.
That's right.
Right? Hey, remember when we had the coup over here? Like, they thought it was going to be by vote who they wanted to be over the camp?
It was a coup, too.
They really thought they were gonna do a coup. It was like who we want. Not who the Spirit of the Most High through the leaders have decided to be over the camp. It's what we want, and we want this guy.
Yeah.
Listen, the Bible says this is why you do not vote, because we don't have a say in that, right? And I know you get into politics, and they say, oh, but if you don't vote, it makes their vote stronger. There is all the same. There are no sides. Our side needs to be the side of the Most High God, and that's the bottom line, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's the point, and that's why we were bringing that out. Let me finish. Let me just share this on a couple more pages here.
Yeah, what? That's a fallacy, first of all, that your vote counts, all right? Because, again, this system is so corrupt and so evil, all right? they're not elected. I'm just looking at the Electoral College, how that whole thing works.
Yep.
It is ridiculous. It makes no sense. So all these thousands of people, millions, whatever people vote, and then it's up to certain people in a state to decide if they want this person or not. That's really how it goes now,
yep,
basically, in a nutshell. Mm-hmm. All right, so you're not elected, you're selected, number one. But aside from all of that crap, all right, the scripture that was just brought out now is proof that your vote or voting is not going to change anything. Let me put it this way, okay? You're voting for your enemy to be over you.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
When you go vote, you're voting for your enemy to be over you, okay? Esau is your enemy. Their system is your enemy. Just because Obama was elected, guess what? All right? They're puppets. A president is a figurehead, regardless of how they try to paint it. All right? They don't make nothing. That's why they have a cabinet. And their cabinet is basically like a president is like a CEO of a company, mm-hmm, and their cabinet are the board of directors. Okay? And guess what? The CEO alone can't do anything.
Right.
He still needs the board of directors there. All right. That's just why the way the whole Constitution was set up when it comes to the presidency. All right. There's a lot he can't do. He's really just the commander in chief, really, of one main thing he can do. OK. And activate the military.
Right.
OK. But guess what? He has to be. He can't just do that. He has to. That's why there's Congress. There's a whole thing. Not to get into the whole political thing, all right, but you have to really look deep into how the whole system works. The bottom line is this: you're voting to put someone in charge of you to continue Babylon for Babylon to continue. You're voting for a president for Babylon, your captors to continue.
This is Ecclesiastes 7 verse 13. It says, "Consider the work of God. For who can make that straight which he hath made crooked?"
Mm.
This entire system was designed to not benefit our people,
nope,
but for us to come here and serve a punishment for our disobedience to God. Voting will not make that crooked thing straight. It can't, because God ordained that from the very beginning.
You know why it won't make it straight? Give me a second. That's the six. Here's the reason why.
That's why that verse starts with consider the power,
yep, right,
of God.
Yep.
Here's the reason why that system was never designed.
It was never meant for us.
No. Just go straight to the point. Damn, what the hell is it? I'm looking right at it. I can't see it.
Keywords?
Keywords?
keywords. A world made.
Oh, the world made for our sakes?
Yeah.
That one?
Keywords. That's how you put it, at world made.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
Good.
Oh, my goodness.
You can't see it either, okay, right? I'm looking at it. I'm like,
2 Ezra 6, verse 55.
Okay.
All this have I spoken before thee, O Lord, because thou madest the world for our sakes.
All right, but go read 54, because we may have some new people here. Because I know right now they're thinking John 3:16. But let's make the
2 Ezra 6, verse 54. And after these, Adam also, whom thou madest Lord of all thy creatures. Of him come we all.
Because we all come from Adam, right? Everyone, every nation comes from Adam, right? Because remember, after the world was destroyed by the flood, you had Noah, who had three sons. And from those three sons, remember, Noah came from the lineage of Adam.
Right.
So they're not lying there. This is true.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a chosen seed, as you're going to read. Go ahead.
And the people also whom thou hast chosen.
All right. So mixed in the fact that we all came from Adam, there's a people that were chosen. And those are the Israelites, the blacks, Hispanic, Native Americans. Go ahead.
All this have I spoken before thee, O Lord. Because thou madest the world for our sakes.
So if he made the world for our sakes, who's supposed to rule it? You need ruling.
Mm-hmm.
Who was supposed to rule it from the beginning? The Israelites. The Israelites. Okay, one last one. Give me 2 Ezra 6 and 7 and 8. I mean, and 9. Go straight to the point.
2 Ezra chapter 6, verse 8. And he said unto me, from Abraham unto Isaac.
2 Ezra 6, verse 9. I'm sorry.
Verse 9. For Esau is the end of the world, and Jacob is the beginning of it that followeth.
All right, so guess what? The world isn't going to end growing up in Christianity.
Right.
Okay, get hit by asteroids and stuff like that, because that's the new thing now. Oh, there's five asteroids coming towards us. Get the hell out of here.
Listen, the beginning is near. Okay. The beginning is near. I love
the
that.
The beginning is near. But it says here, Esau is the end of the world, and Jacob the beginning that followeth. So that means that this world here has to be ruled by a chosen people as we just read in 2 Ezra 6.
This just really nails home when Christ said, "Thy kingdom come, thy will be done."
There you go. That's it.
That's on earth.
Everybody gets that. Like they don't. They don't get that part. They
didn't say on Mars.
What they? No. It says in earth.
In earth. Right.
In earth.
Thy will be done.
Right. Meaning not above the sky. Not in the clouds. In this earth.
The same earth that we're living in now. The only thing that's going to be destroyed according to prophecy is Babylon the Great.
Right. And you know, it's just common sense when you think about it. If a kingdom needs to come into the earth, it's a kingdom.
Kingdom.
A kingdom over the whole earth means all these different governments are gone. There's one rule and one authority.
That's right.
And it's like people seem to like
they just read over the scriptures that say that every knee shall bow.
Hey, even the Pharisees in supposed righteousness didn't want to give up their seat. You
That's
think
right.
these governments are going to give up their seat and their rulership?
Well, if it was the other way around, would we want to?
No.
Right?
Absolutely not.
That's why. This is why don't buy the hype from Edomites, okay, that say, oh, well, that was my forefathers who had y'all slavery. No, because if slavery was legal, trust me, you would have chains on our neck.
That's right.
Right. So let's talk about that because that's actually a perfect segue into what we're going into. All right. Because it talks about this whole strategy. So let's pull up the article first with the Washington Post. And then I also want you to pull up Wikipedia, Southern Strategy. All right, I didn't send you that, so you'll have to pull that one up. But let's put up the article from the Washington Post. And we'll just read the headline first and the first paragraph here. And then we'll go to the Wikipedia, Southern Strategy. So it says, what we got wrong about the Southern Strategy. Some of you may have never heard this term. This might be the first time you're hearing something about this. But there is an actual strategy, right? There is a crafty council, right? There always is. Okay. This is what we got wrong about the Southern. What we got wrong about the Southern strategy. It says it took much longer and went much further than we think. And she says most Americans have heard the story of the Southern strategy. I would say most Americans have not.
Right.
The Republican Party, and mind you, it's both parties, right? I mean, if you go back to, I remember having to take a writing intensive government class, and I think the Republicans today, it was not the same ideology back then. Like the Democrats were the ones that were for slavery back in the day.
Yes, they were.
So it's like they became like the Republican Party. Like I can't remember the exact details, but there was what was the Democrats is actually the Republicans today. And the Republicans were, so it was flipped basically with the ideologies. But it says the Republican Party, in the wake of the civil rights movement, decided to court Southern white voters by capitalizing on their racial fears. Republican presidential candidate Barry Goldwater first wielded this strategy in 1964, and Richard Nixon perfected it in 1968 and 1972, turning the solidly Democratic South into a bastion of Republicanism. Now, before we read further, let's go to Southern Strategy on Wikipedia.
Fun fact for you. My friend's grandma used to make Barry Goldwater mayonnaise and cucumber sandwiches.
Oh, really?
Used to make him, like actual him, like his ass?
So she was like his servant?
Like, I guess they were friends.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Barry Goldwater, huh?
Yeah.
Fucking one.
It's funny. I was watching The Umbrella Academy season 2. It takes place in the 1960s, pre-civil rights. So it was during the unrest and stuff. So while it is an entertaining show in its concept of other things, they do show some lesbianism. So they had to throw that in there.
Naturally.
Because remember, they liken the LGBT thing to civil rights. So
the
two conflicts in season 2 revolves around racism and the non-acceptance of homosexuality. But it's not so horrid that it's not watchable. It's a little bit. They do focus a lot on because one of the Umbrella Academy, she's a so-called African-American. She's Judah.
Right.
And they're displaced in time. And so they show a little bit of it, and it kind of sparked some stuff in me, like thinking about it again, because I know a lot of times we look at these movies with slavery. I think we need to see more with like the civil rights movement too, which was supposedly once we didn't have slavery, like pre-civil rights is what I'm talking about.
Right.
So you can see how things were, right? I think we forget that. And I know our younger generation, especially these damn millennials, have no connection to that sort of thing, you know? So Southern Strategy, let's read this for those who don't know. In American politics, the Southern strategy was a Republican Party electoral strategy to increase political support among white voters in the South by appealing to racism against African Americans. And African Americans, and there's a lot that goes out there and they don't say it, but it was also against, not as heavily because there was not as much immigration in the numbers that we see now today. But also Mexican. Remember, I said no Negroes, no Mexicans, no dogs.
Yep. No Puerto Ricans.
No Puerto Ricans. There's some that say no Puerto Ricans. And mind you, Puerto Rico was a commonwealth at that point, and there was still this disdain against them. Because what we're talking about is Jim Crow and segregation when we talk about this civil rights movement era, right? So that was where, you know, one side of the street had a white diner and the other side had a diner for blacks. One side of the street had a white barbershop and right across the street you had a black barbershop, right? Late 1800s.
Yeah. Okay, so yes. So we were part, Puerto Rico became part.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's 1898, I think. I could be off by a couple of years.
But before then were the Spaniards.
Right.
By
1898, the United States had it as a, you know, I might be off a little bit with the dates. But
it was just one Edomite nation taking it from another Edomite nation.
It was well before the 50s and 60s, though.
Yeah. So I just make that point because African-Americans, it was largely focused on them. But the same disdain, like lumped into that, was so-called Hispanics. There just wasn't as much with the immigration here back then. But anyway, so it says basically the strategy was appeal to racism. I got to tell you, Trump did this in a very subverted type of way to gain office. He spoke to this base, and it goes to show you, and if anything, it should scare you as to how he got elected so overwhelmingly. Because everybody was thinking, oh, well, we had a black president, so that means everybody must not be racist. And it turns out, you know, you follow that up with Trump and his subtle racism. And there you go. So it says, as the civil rights movement and dismantling of Jim Crow laws in the 1950s and 1960s visibly deepened existing racial tensions in much of the southern United States, Republican politicians such as presidential candidate Richard Nixon and Senator Barry Goldwater developed strategies that successfully contributed to the political realignment of many white conservative voters in the South who had traditionally supported the Democratic Party rather than the Republican Party, right? So this is where you started to see that shift that I was talking about. Democrats, right, and it moved away from Republican. So Republicans became the face of being racist, right? It says it also helped to push the Republican Party much more to the right. So prior to that, they were not this ultra-conservative thing that you read about, right? So it says the Southern strategy refers primarily to top-down narratives of the political realignment of the South, which suggests that Republican leaders consciously appeal to many white Southerners' racial grievances in order to gain their support. This top-down narrative of the Southern strategy is generally believed to be the primary force that transformed Southern politics following the Civil Rights era. The view has been questioned by historians such as Matthew Lassiter, Kevin M. Cruz, and Joseph Crespino, who have presented an alternative bottom-up narrative, which Lassiter called the suburban strategy. This narrative recognizes the centrality of racial backlash to the political realignment of the South, meaning, in just plain speech, they were upset that we took away slavery, right? That slavery was taken away. So there was this racial backlash, right? And then you had all this realignment going on. But suggests that this backlash took the form of a defense of de facto segregation in the suburbs rather than overt resistance to racial integration. And the story of this backlash is a national rather than a strictly southern one. And I this actually the truth lies somewhere in the middle on these narratives, in that though you can't presume that the North was a safe haven completely for black people. There were. It was only because of the laws. There was a lot of people there that did not like black people in the North. You saw a little snippet of that in
that movie,
Harriet.
No, but not only Harriet. The other one where the brother was, remember, he was
12 years
a
slave.
12 years
yeah.
a slave.
But you saw another one in Harriet where once the, what was it called?
I haven't seen it yet.
Something Slave Act, the Rebel Slave Act or whatever it was. It had to do with Dred Scott and everything else. Anyway, once that was passed, mm-hmm. all of a sudden, all the white people that were supposedly for the slaves in the North started turning on them to send them back to to their masses. So it goes to show you it's more of a national thing and not and not that, right? So let's go back to the article. I don't want to get turn this into a class on politics. All right.
Parlor tricks.
Parlor tricks. Politics. Uh-oh. Mm. You going to throw that into bars?
Play on play?
Yeah.
Play on words?
Put wordplay? Mm. So back to the article. So where we left off, it says, but this oversimplified version of the Southern strategy has a number of problems. It overstates how quickly party change occurred, limits the strategy solely to racial appeals, ignores how it evolved, and distorts our understanding of politics today. In reality, the South swung back and forth in presidential elections for four decades following 1964. Moreover, Republicans didn't win the South solely by capitalizing on white racial angst. That decision was but one in a series of decisions that the party made, not just on race, but on feminism and religion as well.
Boom.
All right. And I'm telling you, feminism, this is not for some people who are maybe not familiar with the doctrine of the Bible. Women do play an important role, but it has to be the role of the women. And feminism deconstructs that and breaks it down. Feminism today is called Black Lives Matter.
There you go.
So it says, and religion as well. So it says the GOP, and if you're not sure what I mean by that, without taking the show somewhere else, read the full mission statement of Black Lives Matter.
What they believe.
What they believe. And you'll see that. When they talk about deconstructing that, they talk about the woman being the head in the household and everything, right? So it says the GOP successfully fused ideas about the role of government in the economy, women's place in society, white evangelical Christianity, and white racial grievance in what became a long Southern strategy that extended well past the days of Goldwater and Nixon. This is the foundation, and they're saying the GOP, but I'm going to tell you something. They all play with each other around this, right? It's all play. Sometimes you'll have Republicans in control for a number of years. Sometimes you'll have Democrats. We were talking about the Congress. And I don't just mean that president. You could have a two-term president, and his Congress could be majority Republican during his presidency, right? So they take turns. Kind of like the high priest were doing, right, back then.
There you go.
Right. So it says, look at the strongholds that they put in place. Women's place in society, right? Evangelical Christianity. These are all these different things that they used against us, right? So it says, over the course of 40 years, Republicans fine-tuned their pitch and won the allegiance of Southern whites and their sympathizers nationwide by remaking their party in the Southern white image. Goldwater's campaign did launch the Southern strategy, originally called Operation Dixie, by directly and aggressively championing his vote against the 1964 Civil Rights Act. So he was basically saying, again, much like Trump today with his wall. So the Nixon and Goldwater were doing relatively well in these type of things. And then Nixon obviously got elected based on going against the sentiments of what they wanted, right? So they were against the Civil Rights Act. So it says, as a result, the senator won five deep South states. Now, Goldwater didn't get elected, right? But it says, including 87% of the vote in Mississippi. But this blunt appeal may have done more harm than good, because other than his native Arizona, these were the only states Goldwater won. 4 years later, understanding the risk of such an overt campaign against civil rights, Nixon's team instead coded their racial appeals. And this is the subtlety that they hit you with. The silent majority of white Southerners that the candidate needed to attract understood that Nixon's call for the restoration of law and order, for example, was a dog whistle, signaling his support for an end to protests, marches, and boycotts, while his war on drugs played on racialized fears about crime. So let me explain, because a mouthful was just said here in this article. First, when it talks about this silent majority of white Southerners, again, I'm likening it to what you see today, so you understand that this was civil rights, and don't come up with the BS that, well, now we have civil rights. It's the same thing, right? And mind you, this is somebody who I actually am very concerned about Democrats getting into office, and we'll bring out the scripture on their liberality and how liberals are vile in a little bit when we talk about that. And if I forget, make sure to remind me. Mm-hmm. Because somebody might hear this and say, well, you guys are Democrats, you're pro-Democrat. Remember, that's why I started the show the way we did. You might like some things the Democrats say, you might like some things the Republicans say, as an Israelite in this, but politics altogether is not for us. We established that at the outset, right? But in case you're tuning in late, go back, start from the beginning. So it says that silent white majority was the ones that weren't openly speaking negatively. It wasn't those white supremacists. It's the base that Trump empowered, and when you started to see them now speaking out so boldly against it, right? So there was a lot more of them that would that right, the white grievances that they speak about that were there. The restoration of law and order, they're letting you know that that's code speak, right? It says that he coded the racial appeals, meaning they have their own innuendo, their own language when they put out policies. And you're the dumb on board with these politicians thinking that they're talking to you when they're really speaking to their silent majority that they want to get elected. So law and order was code for, that's why they say it was a dog whistle. A dog whistle, only dogs can hear because of the frequency that it's at. It's a high right. pitch. If I had a dog whistle here and I blew it, nobody here would hear it unless you got dog DNA. Nobody here would hear it, but dogs would start barking all over the place if they were nearby. It's letting you know that this is stuff that you're not going to hear, you're not going to see unless you're able to get information like you're getting today, mm-hmm. right? And it says it signaled his support of an end to those protests for civil rights, marches and boycotts, and then his war on drugs, it played on racialized fears about crime, right? So this is their code talk when they're running for office. So it says Nixon also adopted a stance of benign neglect, and we're going to spend a little time on this, on civil rights enforcement, a message that his advocates, such as Democrat-turned-Republican Senator Strom Thurmond, this is a perfect example because he was a Democrat and he turned Republican because the dog whistle blew and right. he said, oh, okay, let me come out and be more open about this now. Bluntly conveyed to Southern whites on his behalf. As Thurmond put it, if Nixon becomes president, he has promised that he won't enforce either the Civil Rights or the Voting Rights Act. Stick with him, right? So essentially what they were saying is you don't enforce these laws. So they will pass these laws, but the passing of these laws don't mean a damn thing when it comes to up. So they're talking about these laws of prison reform. They're talking about these laws of preventing the police from doing certain things. That's not going to stop the brutality. That's not right. going to stop any of that stuff.
That's evident today, because if it did work, then we wouldn't have a thing called Black Lives Matter today. People wouldn't have to say, hey, my Black Lives Matter, if those things actually came into fruition.
Right. I'll give you an example, a very simple example of a benign neglect after we read the definition. So first, get me the Google definition of benign neglect. Right. And then there's one about the policy, but that's the one I want first. So it says benign neglect is simply non-interference that is intended to benefit someone or something more than continual attention would. Mm. Non-interference. So, for example, many municipalities have laws about what is called jaywalking, which is you don't cross at the crosswalk. You cross in the middle of a street. That is illegal. That is a crime. And you can get arrested and ticketed for that and all of that, right? And there's, depending on where you're at, there's certain types of charges for it. Police in general and courts will not prosecute that, nor will they arrest you for jaywalking, unless they want to bust your chops.
Right.
Right? That's benign neglect. In New York, it's a law that's on the books. And tell me if in New York anybody causing the crosswalk. Everybody causing whatever
That's normally used to stop them.
Right.
And then you escalate it.
Exactly. Exactly.
Because it used to be $5, mm-hmm. and then after Giuliani came in, mm-hmm. it was like $40.
Right.
And it was like a joke. Like, you just don't. Nobody walks on crosswalk.
Right. Right. Nobody does it. That's an oversimplified way to show you what benign neglect is. There's a law on the books, but it's not enforced.
It's too crowded there for everyone to fit on the crosswalk.
Everybody does what
it's freaking
to.
Inconvenient as hell to have to walk to a crosswalk.
You got to wait for that light. You got to wait for that light.
Crosstown blocks. What is it? 4 crosstown blocks is a quarter mile. So can you imagine what
Queens Boulevard.
Gosh.
How wide that is.
Yeah. Queens Boulevard. I got to walk to the crosswalk right, when the freaking store is right here? Get the hell out of here.
Sorry,
I'm playing Frogger.
Sorry.
Bro, and it's like playing Frogger because of all the freaking cars. Hey, speaking of Queens Boulevard, how many people die getting hit by cars on Queens Boulevard?
A lot.
Because of the jaywalking.
A lot.
But they don't enforce it because guess what? Most of it is our people that are getting hit and dying in Queens Boulevard, so they don't care. So benign neglect is non-interference. So meaning they'll pass these civil rights laws, but they're not going to enforce them.
Right.
They'll pass these laws in modern times for this, that. They could pass all these freaking laws that makes the people, we want a victory today in Congress. Those laws are only as strong as their enforcement.
There it is.
And they figured out a strategy where they go, okay, this is what the majority wants. That's fine. We're just not going to enforce it. So let's go to the other one about benign neglect. All right.
I am a man.
First, let me read this top piece here on encyclopedia.com, and then we'll go to the Wikipedia because they also call it municipal disinvestment. There's another, you might hear that term instead of benign neglect. Municipal disinvestment is code talk for benign neglect, mm-hmm. right? Because benign neglect sounds worse, right? So I'm going to read that part. So it says benign neglect is a national race policy whereby the federal government does nothing more than allow the massive civil rights progress of the 1960s to take effect. The phrase began to define the controversy over whether to accept the status quo in government race policy. So when they tell you that we have affirmative action, that we have quotas for hiring and all this other stuff, bullshit. All right, I'm just going to say it plainly.
Yeah, you got to say it that way.
Because what they're really telling you, based on this, this is a coded speak amongst their dogs, because they use the term dog whistle in the article that they use.
And that's what they are. I mean,
hey, and every time you vote as a Black, Hispanic, or Native American, you're just feeding more into this.
Yeah, yeah. You're continuing to pilfer up and keep them in power.
You're perpetuating
this stuff. Yep. So it says, hey, it's fine. The law's passed. We're just going to not enforce it. We're just going to allow the laws to pass. So let's click on municipal disinvestment. Sorry. And this is another term for benign neglect. Municipal disinvestment is a term in the United States which describes an urban planning process. Because who's mostly in urban places? Israelites. In which a city or town or other municipality entity decides to abandon or neglect an area. So this is the progression of that benign neglect. On the macro scale of government, they allow these laws to pass, Civil Rights Act, all this other stuff, but we're just not going to enforce it, mm-hmm. right? Nobody's going to come, right? Because back then, obviously there's more of our people that are police back then. A white cop in the South was not going to help you regardless of what the Civil Rights Act said.
Hell,
they were not going to enforce that stuff.
No.
They damn sure enforced segregation, right? So going back to the Umbrella Academy, they were showing how she got there. She didn't know where she was. She just came from 2019. And she goes into a diner looking for help. And it was one of those things, like, so the bell rings, like when the door opens, like, you know, dramatic effect. And then it was humming when she walked in and everybody was talking. And then you hear, like, utensils drop on plates. Everybody looks at her. And the guy's standing there behind the counter, and he points to the sign. It says "Whites Only," and she was like, "Oh man, what did I get myself into?"
You know, it's not by mistake that they made this season two.
Yeah,
start from there.
Yeah. Hey, it's actually pretty appropriate because it's based on a comic loosely, and there was a thing where they addressed it in the comic. But what I read was the only thing that made it they touched on it in the comic. Going to what your point about, it's not by mistake, they more strongly emphasized it in the show because of all the unrest with what happened with George Floyd and Breonna Taylor very recently. So it says, now benign neglect manifests itself in a more micro sense in the different municipalities by its other name called municipal disinvestment, right? So it's an urban planning process in which a city or town or other municipal entity decides to abandon or neglect an area. This was the Bronx from the late 70s all the way up to, like, what, late 80s probably?
Where
they were like, the hell with you, right? Like, they were like, remember, the Bronx was burning.
Oh,
the hell
yeah,
with
yeah,
it.
I would say late 80s.
They wanted federal help, and they were like, no help, right?
Mostly the 70s, yeah.
Right. So it started in the late 70s, kind of, and then it continued through that time period. The Bronx was a perfect example, but that's not the only place, right? You kind of see that in Chicago now, likely, right? So a lot of these different places where our people are. And it's done by design. So you know, they'll tell you that a place is like that because of the way our people are. And while that's not entirely untrue, because we know what it's like to have unbelieving Blacks and Hispanics and how we roll with each other,
right.
It's more of a design process, like it says here, right? So it says it can happen when a municipality is in a period of economic prosperity and sees that its poorest and most blighted communities are both the cheapest targets for revitalization as well as the areas with the greatest potential for improvement. This is the progenitor of what they now call gentrification.
Right.
So it says it is when a city is facing urban decay and chooses to allocate fewer resources to the poorest communities or communities with less political power. And disenfranchised neighborhoods are slated for demolition, relocation, and eventual replacement.
Hey, that's why, like you guys were talking about, the Bronx is burning, just let it burn. And now it's now they have something called SoBro.
Yeah, like now they have SoBro, which they've built up the South Bronx. And a lot of areas, like Trump was building a golf course there. I don't know if he finished it or whatever.
Yeah, by the Whitestone Bridge, yep.
Yep. So what happens when that happens is it's kind of like stocks, where not to say you can't make money out them outside of the institutional investing, but the price is built in for future earnings already a lot. That's oversimplifying it. It's more complex with stocks. But most of the time, earnings are already factored in. Mm. This is why when a report comes out that they exceeded earnings, the stock goes up. Not just that they met it, all right, whatever. So, again, that's oversimplifying it, but it's the same way they do with neighborhoods with this municipal disinvestment, this benign neglect type of thing. When they come in there and they knew Trump was going to do a golf course, so when they started developing it, the houses already had a buffer to account for what the value would be when these improvements were done. So this way, because if they started developing in there while our people were there, our people could afford it. And then that's not the ones that they want there.
Right.
So they future price it is my point. That's essentially what I'm saying. They future price it. Says disinvestment in urban and suburban communities tends to fall strongly along racial and class lines and may perpetuate the cycle of poverty. That's exactly what their idea is. So they talk about that. Oh, well, you guys got everything, affirmative action, and you get free college and you get all this other stuff. In reality, it doesn't. And this all filters through the whole economic, but this is what I'm saying. Those of you who are ready to go out and vote, you got to ignore that thing, right? Because it don't make sense.
Hey, the mere fact that they had to implement affirmative action and that the Edomites are angry about
exactly.
it tells you something
exactly.
right there.
The fact that they have to write laws mm-hmm. for us for these things lets you know that it's a, like you brought out earlier, it's not straight. It's a crooked system. It's a crooked government. It's not meant for us. So since it's more affluent individuals with social mobility can more easily leave disenfranchised area. We spoke a little bit about social mobility, I think, last week, right? So we're not going to read any more about that piece of it. Let's go back to the one in Encyclopedia. I'm sorry, and that's the one I want. Where is it? I lost it on my end. Hold on. Let me look it up real quick. Benign neglect, sorry. Benign neglect policy is what you need to look up. And then let's open up that link on Encyclopedia. Let's read a little bit more of what it says there. Did you Google it? Go up. Oh, yeah, is that it at the bottom?
Yeah.
That's it. Okay. So it says benign neglect is a national race policy whereby, now mind you, it's a national policy whereby the federal government does nothing more. So we showed you how the local governments institute this and they call it municipal disinvestment, and now how the federal government does it. And it does nothing more than allow the massive civil rights progress of the 1960s to take effect. The future Democratic U.S. Senator from New York, Daniel Patrick Moynihan, in his role as domestic advisor to Republican President Richard Nixon, is widely credited with making the phrase a political buzzword in 1969. Now, it goes to show you there was a Democratic U.S. senator who was, before he became the senator, was a domestic advisor to Richard Nixon, who used this benign neglect policy to get elected. This was that Southern strategy to show you that it don't. The Democrats are good. Then no, they definitely, they most definitely are not.
It's worse.
They actually, in some ways, it might be worse. It says the phrase began to define the controversy over whether to accept the status quo in government race policy. As a result, in New York State and elsewhere, Senator Moynihan lost much political support among African Americans who wanted the government to pursue a more aggressive policy to correct racial inequalities. So let me just propose this scenario for you so that you can understand something here. And let's bring up the thing about the liberal.
Mm-hmm. It's locked and loaded.
For them to have to put a Voting Rights Act in place, right? For them to have to even do that shows you that this thing was never created with us in mind.
The Constitution was never created with us.
Right. And then on top of that, just based on what we read, it talks about how they realize that if you're too open about this, if you don't codify what you're saying, you need some of this vote. Now, it was less important in the 60s, even though we are still the minority, even combined, I believe, we're still the minority to white people, despite what they would have you believe here in the United States. They still make up disproportionately the mass number of people in this country. It will have you believe that they're for you and that and all this other stuff, but it's really just to kind of gain your support to be elected, because as we've grown in number and as more of our people have went out to vote, they realize that to some extent they need your support to gain office. So they will say just enough to you, but then use that coded talk from that Southern strategy. They both use it, Democrats and Republicans, to let the white people know, hey, just because I'm courting these blacks and Hispanics, trust where my loyalties really are.
Trust me, they know that too.
Yeah, they know that. And sometimes it's not even...
Yeah, but our people don't.
Cold.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's so outward. Like Trump said, listen, black people, you tried everything. Just...
What do you got to lose?
What do you got to lose? Just try me.
You know why they do that? So that they on the news, they could put blacks' percentage of voting,
yep,
Hispanics'
right.
percentage of voting. It's all a ruse, man.
Right, right. And so my point is, in the same way Lincoln, we went on record, we did a class when we had our visitors here, saying that if he could, he would unify the country without freeing the slaves.
Yep.
In the same way that his motivation was not compassion, their motivation in courting you for election is not compassion. They are going to take and let me show you how. Let's go back to this before I make this statement. I want the paragraph where it spoke about the Christianity. Okay, so go back to the article, in the Washington Post, and it starts with it's the third paragraph. Washington Post. Okay, scroll up. It's the third paragraph from the start of the article. No, I'm sorry. I know I say that and you guys actually – I meant go to the top. Yeah, close that. No, don't take the offer. All right, close. It starts with in reality. Keep going. Right there. Okay. So it says the GOP success – I'm going down a few lines. It says the GOP successfully fused ideas – about the role of government in the economy, women's place in society, white evangelical Christianity, and white racial grievance, right? There was another one where it mentioned feminism, I think. But anyway, watch what's going to happen. Joe Biden is not only selecting a woman for vice president, they are strongly encouraging him to select a black woman for vice president. And should that come to fruition, and it looks like it's going to be a so-called black woman, it goes to show you how all of it is to play on your stuff so that they can get themselves and guarantee their victories. Because by selecting a woman, he's appealing to feminism. And by selecting a black woman, he's appealing to that thing where you feel like you're included.
And with Obama, they did the same thing. They appeased it so that they can sneak in the LGBT crap.
Right. And you would have thought, here's another thing, now that you bring up Obama, you would have thought, and with the opportunity to get the first black president, the brother would have picked a black running mate.
Mm-hmm. Could it?
Or a Hispanic running mate.
That wasn't the plan.
But they said, no, you got to pick this old boy, this good old white boy.
Because he's been in the Senate for years.
I guarantee you that there was probably a part of him, and it'll never come out, that wanted somebody black. I'm sure he has some black colleagues in some form of government that he wanted to pick. And they told him, you're not going to win that way. You got to pick the white boy.
It's what the flavor just of like the season is.
Just like they're telling Biden now, listen, Trump's base in this coded thing, the way he speaks, they're going to reelect him. The only way you're going to beat him is if we really get the minority vote out. And you know how you're going to do that? You got to say, and he was probably like, yeah, I got to select a black. No, you got to select a black woman.
He probably didn't even really say it like that.
Right. I know him. I know. So,
dude,
and mind you, he's 77 years old.
Right.
If he lives through his first term, he's going to die in his second, right? I can't, I don't know. Listen, I've his lifespan and everything else. And then you're gonna have.
So check this out.
This woman set up to do this.
But check it out. Let's say that is the case, which sounds very likely, right? Mm-hmm. He dies. The vice president becomes the president, right?
Yes.
Guess who becomes the vice president? Nancy Pelosi.
Right. She's hanging on. She's hanging on.
And she's already made statements to the fact.
Right. So the whole point of this is to show you that it's all a farce. It's all a ruse behind it. And don't think Democrats are any better, right? Because they profess themselves to be liberal, right? So let's read what the scriptures say about liberality.
The book of Isaiah, chapter 32 and verse 5. The vile person shall be no more called liberal, nor the said to be bountiful.
It calls liberals vile. It says the liberal person is vile. It's telling you that in that day, the vile person, read it again from the top, I'm sorry.
The vile person shall be no more called liberal.
Right? So it's letting you know that it's not going to have a nice term like liberal. They are vile because what comes at, this is what I'm saying. Like sometimes, if you think about it, I actually like some things that Trump says. I actually like some things the Republican says because most Republicans are against LGBTQ. The Bible's against homosexuality. So guess what? We're against homosexuality. Democrats are not. Right. The Bible is about order. Right. And we're going to talk a little bit about that today with the wife's role and stuff like that in our Sabbath class. But liberals, which is code talk for Democrats, say that no, feminism. Right. Feminism started. I saw a graphic. It said feminism first was we want to be equal to men. Then that was phase one. Phase two was we want to be above men. And phase three was we want to be men.
And that all happened in Genesis.
Yep. Yeah, you're right. You're right. You're actually right. That's the Eve spirit manifest today, right? So it says that vile person, it calls the Bible talks about liberals and it says they're vile. So these Democrats that you might think are any better are really not, right? Let me see if there's anything else from this article I want. And if you guys have anything while I just peruse this, because we're almost done.
Listen, it's a ruse, bottom line, man. Everything is a smokescreen, man, to keep themselves in power. That's all it is. It's a smokescreen to keep, because how many of our people are in Congress, in the Senate, in the House of Representatives, and what have they been able to do? I'm sure they went in there with good intentions, mm-hmm. Right. But they were like, no, listen, the mere fact that you have a R, have a rep initials in front of your name or SEN in front of your name, that's good enough, right? You've made it as a black man or Hispanic man or black woman or Hispanic woman. Stay in your lane. We got this. That's basically what it is. Right. It's a ruse.
Right. I'm going to show you some of the ruse here real quick. I'm just going to read two more paragraphs and then we'll move to wrap up. Make sure that we post this if people want to read the whole thing. There's some good information. It talks about how this strategy evolved. I skipped some stuff here, but it says, once again, the GOP recognized that it needed a new appeal, one that portrayed Democrats as a threat to the brand of Christian values Republicans had been championing for two decades. This time, the party worked to reframe its positions on a host of domestic issues, ranging from health care to foreign policy into matters of religious belief. By making the full spectrum of political debates about fundamental values, Republicans forged an unbreakable bond with Southern white evangelical voters, who went from social conservatives to all-out Republicans by the 2000s. The long Southern strategy had finally come to fruition, and it is still working today. The GOP's partisan conversion of Southern white evangelicals is so complete that no longer must a Republican candidate hold authentic religious beliefs to secure their support.
Right. There it is.
Trump don't believe a damn thing about the Bible.
Man, he probably don't even know where Book of Genesis starts.
Nowhere is this clearer than in Southern white evangelical support for Donald Trump. Indeed, only 38% of white evangelicals living in the South identified Trump as a Christian, but 84% of them still voted for him, right? Mm-hmm. So, and there's more stuff here. It talks about the gender gap. It says more women vote for the Democratic Party than men. So it's all a game is the point that we're trying to bring out, right? And, yeah, it's a big ruse, and we got to be mindful of it, right? Because all these leaders are corrupt. Like we started at the outset of the show, right? All these leaders are corrupt. And, you know, should you be somebody newer in this walk thinking that it's okay to vote? At the beginning of the show, we showed you that it is not. And should you be somebody that is tuning in and has not embraced your true heritage according to the scripture as an Israelite? Now you have a little more understanding that this whole thing, just let it play out. Because what we do understand, according to Romans 13, is that with your vote or without it, God has his plan that he's putting in place.
Hey, we have a king already.
Mm-hmm.
or president, whatever way you want it. And he's Christ, the black Messiah.
Right. We're just waiting for his coronation.
We're just waiting for him, right. We're waiting for his inauguration, right?
Yeah, you would call it his inauguration.
I mean, well, he's inaugurated, but we're waiting for his...
His coronation.
Coronation, yeah.
Coronation day.
Yep.
When he receives
yes,
the crown openly.
Yeah,
right?
I like that.
So we're waiting for his coronation. Yes. That's it. But in our waiting, there's things that we must do. Repent, keep the commandments, or the kingdom is at hand.
Right. Not vote.
Yeah, not vote. All right. Okay. Anybody else?
No.
All right. That's the show. Lord's will will be on next week. And with that, we say shalom.
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 Let's go. Israel is back. We got the nations running scared because Israel is back. All lies on us because we're keeping them lost. When the Lord returns, Babylon will fall. Prepare solid. We got them on lock. God's chosen people with Christ as our rock. Israel is back.
We back.
Israel is back.
We back.
You heathen, get ready for our whip to crack.
Thank you.
You know what, man? I think now, from now until the election, we got to really start hitting this